Welcome to The Biz with your host, Cleo. The show is brought to you by Colo Cat Iron Hosting, and tonight's guest is Jay. Calling Jay now.
Hey there.
Hey, Jay. How you doing tonight?
Good. How are you doing?
Doing good. Actually, I guess it's 6 o'clock at your time?
Seven.
Okay.
Yeah.
You're in Texas now, aren't you?
Yeah.
Okay. You have to quit being L.A.J.
Yeah, I don't really use that so much anymore.
Okay. So, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
And for the listeners that don't really know much about you, what do you do? Who are you? And all that good stuff.
All right. Well, let's see. I've been in the industry for about 11 years now. I'm the vice president of WhyNot.com, which, for the old-timers out there, they know that that's the first no webmaster resource site. It started back in 96. I'm in charge of all sales, marketing, and PR here, and I also run our trade show, which is the Why Not Summit. And then other things that I do, I've got my own consulting business that I run with Connor from Why Not called Delta House Marketing, where we do sales, marketing, webmastering, affiliate work, pretty much anything that somebody would need to help build their business. And then in addition to that, I'm also attorney Eric Bernstein's marketing guy, so I get him clients. So I've really kind of diversified over the last 11 years.
Wow, sounds like you're a busy man.
Yeah.
So what do you think about the state of the business these days?
Well, you know, I think we bottomed out. I think the worst was a couple of years ago. So obviously, even though things are still not great for most, we are at least going in the right direction. I think there's been a few ordeals lately with trying to go after piracy. And I'm not talking about the attorneys that go after end users on torrent sites, but actually requiring license agreements. And I think what's happening is, you know, there's the beginning of a push to try to shut down tube sites. And I think that, you know, along with the economy, is what really put us all in this predicament in the first place. So that would be a huge step forward. But, you know, my thing is that, you know, what I did just out of love for the industry as well as for my own, you know, my own well-being was to just try to take on as many projects as possible and see what sticks. Because if you're not making money somewhere, you have to figure out another way to do it.
That is so true. I think the economy has a lot to do with the state of the business right now.
Yeah, definitely.
You know, people just don't have money. And I'd love to see the illegal tubes go.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, in order for the industry to work for all of us, there has to be some sort of point of entry for money. I mean, you know, the money's got to come from somewhere. And, you know, without people making money to want to pay for it, you know, coupled with the fact that a whole generation of people are pretty much learning that you can get this stuff for free and that you should get it for free, you know, it really packed a 1-2 punch. So, you know, that's really what got the ball rolling. And unfortunately, a lot of people who made easy money back in the day, you know, and I'm not saying this is everybody, but a lot of people who were used to making easy money and then all of a sudden really had to work hard and innovate, you know, for it, weren't prepared. And, you know, when you're losing 75-90% of your business, you know, you have to let people go, and, you know, pretty soon you don't have a company anymore.
The I think a lot of the lucky people found themselves all of a sudden having to really actually work at this business.
Yep.
And a lot of the hobbyists, I think, are gone, which is good for the real people in the business.
Yeah, definitely. And that's one thing you definitely notice at trade shows, that there's no hobbyists that go. I mean, unfortunately, a lot of good people don't go anymore either. But you really notice that the fat has been trimmed. So you're not going to sit there wasting your time talking to someone who really doesn't have anything going on there, you know?
No, I see on the boards the hobbyists are all gone. And, you know, I run a link list and I see all the hobbyist submitters are gone.
Yeah.
And that's a good thing.
Yeah, definitely. It's funny because, you know, if I may interject, people that you didn't really know were hobbyists, you know? And it's like, oh, okay. He's gone too.
Yeah, I've seen an awful lot of names disappear in the last few years.
Yep.
And, talk about Why Not a bit.
Yep.
And I remember Why Not from when I first got in this business back in the late 90s.
Yep. Yeah, you were among that first generation. I came in at 2000, so unfortunately I missed the real Wild West days. I'm sorry, were you going to say something?
I'm sorry, no, that was, I think, your background noise.
Okay, yeah. My kid's in the other room, and I don't know how many times I need to tell him to be quiet, and it just doesn't work, so... Well, Why Not started out, as a group that you had to be voted into. And, I mean, there were no other resources like it on the internet for adults. In fact, it's safe to say that Why Not was pretty much, the first, I guess, social network for adults on the internet, adult business to business, long before social networking ever became a word. And, then in the early 2000s, there became a big influx of other, webmaster resource sites and boards. I mean, most notably NetPond, which is known as the Con Chronicles back then. Go Fuck Yourself got going. I think it was around late 2000, beginning of 2001. And then, I mean, it just exploded. But still, there was still enough business to go around. I mean, obviously, most of these sites are driven by, webmaster advertising. And a huge chunk of that was from affiliate programs, because that's where the bulk of the people were making their money. And then a lot of the boards and resource sites started failing because they realized that, it's tough keeping up something of value, which only stood to help us out. We just like everyone else, kind of got caught up in it, and, it was that period of time, starting from like 2008, where a lot of affiliate programs started just dropping like flies. So that took a huge chunk out of the revenue that we had to deal with. And, we just more or less kind of treaded water for a while because we had to really just focus on keeping the business alive. And that didn't really allow us any time for development or anything like that. So, the innovation was gone. And we were just, trying to keep Why Not alive. And essentially, as things started improving for us, and we ended up hooking up with a European company that really injected a lot of capital into us. We were able to take CyberNet Expo and make that into Why Not Summit. And then recently, just over the last year and a half, we've launched Why Not Mail, Why Not Europe, Why Not Market, which is a buying and selling site for domains and websites. And then we got the Why Not Grand Prix, which we launched about a year ago, which is just fun kart racing, which actually NetPond used to do back in the day. And finally, Why Not Awards, which are going to be launching at the European Summit, which is going to be an all industry voted endeavor. So, it's completely fair and objective.
Tell us about the show you do.
Well, I started out with, for people that don't know, Faye and Dave, an older couple that started CyberNet Expo. It was actually Adult Dex, I think, back in 97. And when I got into the biz, my first show, I think, was IA 2000 in New Orleans. And, I mean, I was really just blown away. I mean, it was humongous. The amount of money that went into stuff like that was just insane. And I think I went to my first CyberNet Expo in, like, it was either 2000, I think it was 2001 or 2002. And while it wasn't, small by any stretch, it wasn't, out of control either. And I got a lot of business and networking done at my first one. And, fell in really good with Dave and Faye. And, flash forward another year or two, and they, were clearly thinking of getting out of the business at that point. And I approached them saying, hey, I'll work for free for you guys. I like the way you have the educational program set up. Well, let me take over your seminars and let me take control of, the topics and the scheduling and, the speakers. So they let me run with it, and it turned out to be, a good success that year. It was in Montreal. And then before you knew it, they wanted to pretty much just have Why Not take over half the show, where they'd be dealing with the hotels and all the, clerical type stuff, and I would be responsible for not only the seminars, but for selling all the sponsorships and getting as many people there as possible. So it was a really good boot camp for me. That was like back in 2004, 2005, to the point where... and a lot of other shows come and go, and it's a lot of hard work, but I mean, it's, you know, it's a lot of fun. I really enjoy it.
You did a show at one time in Miami, didn't you, at the Fountain Blue? A long time ago?
That was right before I, you know what, that sounds like I think it was in 2000 or 2001. I didn't make it to that one. Were you that one?
That's the very first show I ever went to.
Huh, okay. Yeah, that would be at least 10 years ago.
Yeah, I'm old. You ever think of bringing the show back to Florida?
Well, we did in 2007. We did it in Tampa, which, you know, it didn't go over as well as we'd hoped. For some reason, a lot of people from the West Coast don't like to travel to the East Coast, but, you know, vice versa, people will travel from the East Coast to the West Coast. So we, you know, kind of have to go where the money is, so to speak. And I can tell you now that we're not going to return to San Francisco, even though we've been there the last 4 years, for 2012. So really, we're kind of playing around with the idea of where and how we're going to do the show and the format, because the way it is right now, it's just not working. You know, we need to get more sponsors in order to make it more profitable. I mean, we're still profitable, but when you take a lot of the time and effort into consideration, you know, we need to do something different. So we are possibly looking at Florida, but we're also possibly looking at Austin as well.
Yeah, being a Florida resident, I'm biased, but now that AVN is gone in Florida, I was just wondering about that.
Well, isn't XBiz doing some show in South Florida next year or later this year, something like that, in their place?
If it is, I don't know about it. You'd probably be more informed about the shows than me.
You know, I heard something about it, but I haven't seen anything. So, I mean, maybe they're thinking about doing it for 2012. I know that they're doing something in London or whatever, right after all the European shows coming up next month. But yeah, my guess would be if they do, it would be next summer. But I also think that AVN is coming back next summer for something in South Florida.
Oh, is it? Okay, I hadn't heard about that.
Yeah.
I thought the show had pretty much died after the last few I'd been to.
Well, it couldn't, you know, they couldn't keep it up the way they had been at the Diplomat, even though that hotel is perfect. I mean, the space, the beach, the location, everything about it's perfect, but...
Except the price.
Yeah, well, the thing is that those kind of hotels, and I mean, speaking as a show organizer, they gouge the shit out of you. I mean, the amount of money that we have to pay hotels, and the hotel that we did it in San Francisco was nothing spectacular. So, I mean, we have to pay through the nose for a lot of services. I mean, just for example, if I want to have a pot of coffee after the attendees for a couple of hours, you know, it's $75 for 2 gallons.
Oh, my God.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, we're giving free coffee, and I'm paying out of pocket $75 for 2 gallons of coffee, which is going to be gone in a matter of about, you know, 15 to 30 minutes. So, yeah, they have to charge a price. But, I mean, in order to take over the entire hotel, you have to put down some sort of a guarantee of rooms. And if you're not meeting that room block, then AVN has to pay for the attrition. And if they're not making that, you know, making the room block, and they're paying attrition, that's going to cut hugely into their bottom line.
Well, as a local of South Florida, the Diplomat is one of the most expensive hotels around here.
Do you know what they charge a night for a room just during the regular, like, tourist season, I'd say, like fall or spring?
Not really, but I would imagine it starts around $200.
No, that's not really too bad, actually.
Well, it depends on, you know, I'm more of a budget type of, I mean, I go to the Keys all the time and I get nice cottages for $100 a night.
Oh, wow. That's great. Now, we were actually scouting out a few places in Austin, and some of the highest end places around here during the best time of year, like, which is South by Southwest in March, before it gets too hot out and where there's so much going on. Some of these places start at $400 a night, believe it or not.
Oh, yeah, that's not that uncommon, but yeah. There's also a lot of hotels for $50 a night.
So, yeah.
I mean, not as nice as the Diplomat, but these days people are tight on money.
They are, but you're always going to get those people that the first thing they're going to bitch about are the arrangements because they're so used to staying in 4- and 5-star places, you know? It's so hard to toe the line and try to appeal to everyone, you know?
Yeah, that's definitely true. One of the bad things about the Diplomat was there's nothing around it. I mean, it's a beautiful hotel. It's air-conditioned, which is great in August, but there's nowhere to go around it.
What, as far as, like, just places to visit and see, or?
Well, want to get out of the hotel and eat a meal, or, you know, go have a drink, or do something. It's kind of, the Diplomat was built in kind of a bad section of Hollywood, and there's really nothing else around it.
When you say bad section, are you saying, like, crime-wise, or just nothing to do?
Run down, old, decaying.
Huh.
I imagine the property was cheap. That's why they bought it.
That's interesting. I mean, because you say that, because you live near there, right?
I live 20 minutes away.
Yeah, so, I mean, you know, I'm sure, quite well which areas are good and which aren't. I mean, you know, I've always loved that area. I guess I didn't see any of the problems or anything like that. And then if you went down to, like, what was the main street that's east-west, about a half a mile south of there?
Hollywood Boulevard.
It is Hollywood Boulevard. Okay, yeah, there's some restaurants down there. I mean, you know, a group of us have walked down there a few times.
Okay, I mean, I live next to Fort Lauderdale Beach. Fort Lauderdale Beach, within 5 minutes, I can get pretty much anything I want as far as drinks or food or anything.
Huh.
I mean, I walk to the 24-hour pizza place from my house sometimes.
Interesting.
So it's Hollywood's nice, but it's they did put the Diplomat kind of in the middle of a bunch of old motels.
Yeah, you know, further up Hollywood Boulevard, you're right. You know, coming in from the airport, I do recall that there's some kind of scummy places, but you know, further than walking distance, kind of, I think.
So where do you see this business going? You said you think it's bottomed out.
Yeah, I think, you know, we're on the right track as far as, you know, trying to get piracy under control. I mean, that's a major step. It's so hard to say. I mean, I hate making any kind of predictions or, you know, looking in a crystal ball, so to speak, just because, you know, it's hard for me to really focus that far ahead, I guess. I guess I'm more in the here and now of where things are. Obviously, there's going to be a need for what we put out. That's never going to change. People are always going to want, you know, always going to want porn to some degree.
I mean, do you think there's still a future for affiliates?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, if the whole tube site phenomenon goes away, then affiliates and traffic are going to be, you know, much more important again.
You don't see the sponsors just putting their direct marketing through the legal tubes?
Well, possibly. I mean, you know, they could obviously license their content and give it away for free and everything, but, I mean, if they don't have to, because a lot of times, you know, they got into bed with the illegal tube sites because they kind of did it out of necessity. I mean, they had their stuff taken from them, it was being used, and, you know, you could only throw so many DMCA notices out there, so at that point, it's like, all right, well, you have my stuff. I really don't want to go to the mat with you legally. Let's figure out a way that you can at least pay us, you know, for our stuff.
I don't understand sponsors that put 20-minute vids up of their stuff.
Yeah, exactly. Anybody that's watching that isn't going to want to click through and pay for anything. I mean, tube site traffic converts typically, what, 1 in 20,000, 1 in 50,000?
I run a small legal tube. It's all sponsor content, and conversions are pretty much zero.
Yeah. Yeah,
basically you're doing a tube for the impressions of juicy ads or something, and that's about it.
Well, now maybe a few affiliate programs are going to want to continue dealing with just tube sites only and not dealing with affiliates, but I mean, we've all seen how effective good affiliate traffic can be. I mean, back in the day, affiliates were making, you know, it was not unheard of to be making 5-6 figures a month as an affiliate. If you had enough sites out there and were sending traffic to some of the biggest whales, you know, I'm not saying that we're ever going to get back to that level. But I mean, if you're going to do away with as much of the, I mean, because free is really, that's what created it all. Even when we were giving away tons of free, you know, content at the beginning days of TGPs and stuff, people were saying, yeah, you know, too much giving away for free. And then they tried to do TGP2. And that, you know, people are saying, look, we need to put a lid on this. Traffic was still converting. People were still making, you know, a ton of money as affiliates. You know, sponsors were still, you know, bragging about how they were doing, you know, $1 million payouts and stuff like that over, you know, however course of a time that they were doing. Giving away, you know, these ridiculous cars at shows to their top affiliate. And I don't think those days are ever going to come back, but you know, if we start eliminating all of the free stuff and a lot of the free tube, the illegal tube sites are going away, it's just going to, you know, make affiliate programs that much more valuable. And, you know, there's always the opportunity that new affiliate programs are going to pop up, you know, with innovative stuff, and, you know, that content won't be anywhere.
You know, it's one thing that bothers me besides the tubes is Google. You go to Google, you go to image search, you type in a porn star's name or a niche or something, and you've got a million pictures right there.
Yeah. Now, the thing about Google is they don't really care. I mean, you know, they don't really give a shit. And that's, you know, people go about Google Plus and everything, and, you know, I got an account there, but the more I read and the more I find out about it, the more it's just like, you know what? I'm really not interested in sticking around on this.
I personally think Google's gotten too big for all of us, but...
Yeah.
But, so what kind of efforts are being done to get rid of the illegal tubes?
You know, I'm trying to think. I actually was just at the FetishCon in Tampa last weekend, and I was talking to an attorney there, and I guess there's some sort of legislation that they're trying to put through that's making it illegal for not just adult tube sites, but YouTube to carry unlicensed content. And, you know, I didn't really get the full gist of the conversation, but it's something that's underway. And I mean, you know how legal battles can go on for years and years. I mean, it took .xxx like 10 or 11 years to finally get online, even after being shot down a number of times. You know, I think that finally the proper channels are being taken to go after sites that, you know, don't have licensed content. I mean, it's going to be a lot of work because it's ridiculous how many sites out there and how many of them are not, you know, being hosted or located on American soil. You know, I mean, I can't even fathom how they would go about doing that, because to me it just kind of sounds like, you know, putting a bandage over a big gaping wound. But, you know, who knows? If this gets traction and takes off, then it could hopefully put a lot of tube sites out of business.
I think maybe creating them in the pocketbook, too. I mean, like, someone's on IRC mentioning AdBrite, and, you know, people who are putting ads on these illegal tube sites, if they don't have the revenue from ads, they're not profitable to run anymore.
Yeah, well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, tube sites pretty much are all just advertiser-driven revenue as well, right? I mean...
Not advertising the pay sites that they're running their tubes of, they're running penis pills and...
Yeah, so they're pushing a lot of peripheral products and stuff as well, obviously.
Right, right.
Okay. And I'll be honest, I spend almost no time on tube sites. The only time I ever really go to them is if I'm checking out to see who's spending money advertising there.
Yeah, that's what, sometimes I look just to see who's, I mean, often I have a sponsor and my conversions to the sponsor just fall, and I'm not going to name any, but, and I go there and there's pretty much the entire sponsor's content on the tube sites, and that's when I stop advertising them.
Yeah, you know, that's a good, it's a good method to have. I mean, you know, a number of people who, you know, who do, you know, what you do and who've been around for a long time, you know, they pay attention to who's doing what, and, you know, the first win they catch of a company doing something unethical, you know, they'll pull the links. They'll be done with them.
So you say you do consulting work now.
Yes.
Want to talk a little about that?
Yeah, absolutely. Connor and I, about 2 years ago, almost, just out of necessity, started our own consulting business. We figured, you know, he's really got a good, solid webmaster and business development program and is able to see the big picture on things. Whereas I'm more of a hustler and more into sales and marketing and, you know, generating new business. So we decided, you know, why don't we start something up and see if we can find companies out there or look for investors that want to try to get a product going and, you know, do the age-old mistake that a lot of newcomers in the industry make, where they don't go to the right sites or they deal with the wrong people that fleece them. And, you know, so we called it Delta House Marketing because we're both fans of the movie Animal House. And it's at deltahousemarketing.com. So we essentially picked up our first client at the AVN show in January of 2010. And we've had, you know, a handful of clients since. Currently we have three different clients. One of them is actually a site called Sextons, and that's three X's, sextons.com. They're actually working on their DVD as well right now as we speak. Another one I can't really get into because we haven't launched yet, but it's a very, very specific fetish type site and affiliate program, and there's like almost nothing like it on the internet, so we think it's going to do really well. And the other is another type of content, which I don't know how well it's going to sell, but it's something that can definitely work in conjunction with other sites. And I know that sounds really cryptic as hell, but unfortunately I can't get too much into that yet. We provide, I mean, the gamut. I mean, if somebody wants to, you know, figure out who to host with, who to bill with, how their affiliate program should look, you know, just general business direction, management, sales, design, webmastering, I mean, you name it. We pretty much try to be like a one-stop shop for all of our clients. You know, a lot of our clients, a lot of times all they need are more clients for themselves.
So do you have designers that you're working with?
Yeah, we have designers that we're working with and coders. And, you know, just a plethora of people that, you know, look for part-time work that we farm out stuff to, because obviously running this business, we can't do all the stuff ourselves.
Yeah, I've been having a hard time myself trying to find designers that actually complete the jobs.
Yeah, I know a few good ones. You're more than welcome to hit me up afterwards, and I can put you in touch with people that are extremely reliable.
Reliable is important.
Yep, it sure is. I mean, and the price is good too, but I mean, I would take, you know, reliable over cheap any day.
Oh, definitely. So, what other stuff you do?
Well, one of my first side projects outside of Why Not was hooking up with attorney Eric Bernstein. And, you know, I met him, God, 8 or 9 years ago. And he, you know, was trying really hard to get into the trade show circuit, you know. The attorneys in this industry really, I mean, they're friendly up front to each other, but they have zero interest in helping each other out, you know. And he was having a hard time trying to get into speaking at the shows. So this is when I was actually working on CyberNet. And I threw him a bone, and next thing you know, we became friends. And then a couple of years into it, I said, hey, why don't you hire me? And I'll go and get clients for you and manage your booth at different shows and get you speaking opportunities and PR opportunities. And, you know, up until about 2006, there was very few people that had ever heard of him in the industry. So I like to think that, you know, he's well-known and has, you know, a lot of adult clients because of my work for him. And I am coming up on 6 years now, and I'm actually heading to the Exotic Dancer / Gentlemen's Club Owners Expo in Vegas in a few weeks. Where I'll be running his booth and being all dressed up and kind of looking and playing the part of a lawyer, so to speak. So it's, you know, it's
Exotic Dancers Expo. That sounds interesting.
Yeah, it's at the Mirage. It's usually in conjunction with Store Erotica, which is, you know, clothing, toys, really any kind of hard goods, so to speak. Yeah, I mean, it's a fun time. You're dealing with a much more business savvy and mature crowd, I think. And, you know, the booths there, you know, it's huge. There's a lot of exhibits, and that's just something that you don't really see so much anymore when going to B2B shows.
So where is your next show? I think I missed that.
Yeah, it's in Vegas at the Mirage. I think it's like August 22nd through 25th. Next thing that I'm going to be going to after that, actually, I'm going to the Webmaster Access Amsterdam and then the European Summit in Prague, which I'm really excited about because I've never been to Europe before.
Lucky you.
Yeah, so this should be a really good time, you know. But as well, I've been doing business with so many people in Europe over the years. It's going to be finally nice to meet a lot of these people face-to-face. But we're still in works about where we're going to put on the Why Not Summit for 2012. You know, we're looking at Austin in the spring, but nothing's confirmed as of yet.
Yeah, I'm actually moving my show to an earlier time slot so I can interview some European webmasters in the coming weeks.
Yeah, I mean, you do all your stuff, it's all live, right?
It's all live, but it's archived, and We have a tremendous amount of people that listen to the archives.
Yeah, well, that's good. Yeah, I figure, well, starting now in Europe, it's probably, what, like, it's at least 12:30 in the furthest western part, or even 1:30 in the morning now, so.
Yeah, it's, you know, it's really inconvenient, the Earth being round, and everybody being in a different time zone.
Yeah, when I was running the Why Not Update Lunch back in, like, 2001 to 2006, ours was, I think we did it at, was it noon or 1 o'clock Pacific time? So it'd be like 4 or, no, it was noon. It was noon Pacific, so it was 3 Eastern, and we would be able to get European people on. It would be like 8 or 9 o'clock p.m. their time.
Yeah, that's about the time I was going to switch it to.
That's good.
Plus, I kayak in the evenings, and this is 8 o'clock in the evening.
Where do you kayak? Like down the causeway or whatever?
I live next to the waterways, you know, the intercoastal.
Yeah.
We go out into the ocean and I go snorkeling from my kayak.
Nice.
It's great exercise.
Never have to worry about sharks?
We have a lot of nurse sharks. They don't have any teeth. We don't really have a shark problem here. I can't remember the last time someone was attacked by one. And the barracudas are pretty scary looking.
I'm sure. How big are those?
You know, I don't know the exact size, but, you know, you're underwater, everything's magnified, and you just see these big teeth. And fortunately, I went actually snorkeling a couple days ago, and we got invaded by jellyfish.
Aye.
That wasn't really any fun.
No.
But I'm going Sunday again, providing, Emily doesn't come visit us.
Oh, yeah, I think it's going to miss the floor. I mean, you'll probably get some rain, but, you know, I'm kind of a nerd when it comes to, like, weather patterns and stuff and geography. So, you know, I've been kind of checking out the hurricane website from time to time. And it just seems like it's veering more and more east as it goes. I mean, it's probably pounding the hell out of Haiti right now, but...
Poor Haiti.
Yeah, I mean, they can't get a break, you know, but that's what happened right in the middle of the Atlantic like that.
I mean, it looks like it's going to do it, but then again, this is what Hurricane Andrew did. We're supposed to go north, and then at the very last minute, it made a left and severely strengthened and wiped out South Florida.
Were you living there back then?
I've been here since 1969.
Holy crap.
I did live in San Francisco for 3 years, but other than that, I've been here since 1969.
Oh, that's crazy. You know, I actually, my grandma used to live, when she was alive, she lived in Miami Beach.
Okay.
The first time I was out in Florida, actually some of my earliest memories was in the early to mid-70s.
Miami Beach was awesome back then.
Yeah, it was before, really just before everything all started going to hell.
Everything went to hell, it died out, and now South Beach and stuff has life again.
Yeah, I mean, what were the bad years? Like, pretty much from, like, the late 70s to the late 80s, right?
I would say, yeah, the late 70s, the 80s, and then in the 90s it started getting really good again.
Yeah.
But, I mean, when I was a kid, I saw it, all the performers used to be in the hotels and everything. I mean, I could remember going to see Diana Ross in like, a 100-seating hotel.
Yeah.
It was nice back then. Now now it's mostly hip-hop.
Yeah. Well, I'm looking at a map right now, and it looks like it's going to weaken to a tropical storm. You'll get some serious rain, but I don't think you're going to get any kind of hurricane-like stuff.
No, we need the rain desperately. Although one of the storm tracks actually has it staying south of Cuba and heading straight to Texas.
Oh, really?
That was the advisory I looked at right before I saw the show.
And we're too far inland, unfortunately, to catch anything. I mean, I swear, the only way that we would even remotely catch, like, a tropical storm here in Austin is if, like, a Category 4 or 5 slammed right into the middle Texas coast by, like, Corpus Christi.
Oh, I didn't realize you were way up in Austin. I thought you were near the coast.
Nah, I'd say as the bird flies or the eagle flies or however that stupid saying goes, probably about minimum of 150 miles from the nearest water.
God, I'd be miserable there. I'm an ocean person.
Oh, there's a huge lake, probably about a half an hour from my house. But
lakes don't count.
Yeah, they don't. I mean, if you're used to the water, I mean, there's no comparison whatsoever. I mean, for all intents and purposes, yeah, we're landlocked here. You know, but to get to, like, some really nice coastal you know, down by like Galveston or whatever. That's, you know, we're looking at about a 3.5 hour drive if you want to get to some place where there's like fun things to do. But otherwise, it's, you know, it's about 2 hours till you hit water.
What made you leave L.A.?
Well, we were living in, you know, rent-controlled apartment in West Hollywood, and, you know, we weren't getting any younger, wanting to get a house, and then our son was born, and, you know, at that time it was, what, 2004, and real estate was still absolutely ridiculous out there, and I mean, I was an actor in L.A. before then, so there just really wasn't any reason for us to stick around. So we really wanted to go to a warm climate that had a lot of liberal-leaning people and just a lot to offer and kid-friendly. And, yeah, Austin was just the place to be. I mean, it's insane how many people from California are out here, you know, because the houses, I mean, I swear, it's like one-third the price, less even.
Someone's asking what kind of fun things are to do in Galveston.
Oh, in Galveston, you know, I mean, all water activities. I mean, you know, the water will get high enough where you can actually surf. You know, you can go boating out there for sure. You know, there's tons of great fishing out there. It's just the beaches out there are nowhere near as attractive as you're ever going to see in California or South Florida. But, you know, all the things that you could normally do at any other beach, you could do there too.
Yeah, I've been to Houston and that's about it as far as Texas. I don't really know Texas.
Most of the state is, you know, I mean, let's just put it this way. New York City is to New York, as San Francisco is to California, as Austin is to Texas, as South Florida is to the entire state of Florida. So you know what that means.
Oh, yeah. That's I wish South Florida would succeed from the rest of the Florida.
Would you take Broward County with you, or would it...
I'm in Broward County.
You're in Broward County. So would you Broward and Dade only, right? Or would you...
Broward West and Dade only. I mean, Palm Beach, if they asked real nice, we could take them in.
What's the county... Wait a minute. Does Dade go all the way down past, like, Homestead? Is that all still Dade?
Yeah, Dade goes pretty much... trying to think. I think it pretty much ends around where the Keys start.
Okay.
And then it goes up into just before Hollywood. Hollywood's actually part of Broward.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah.
My host is in Miami.
Yeah. Would that be Mojo Host?
No, I'm with Colo Cat Iron. CD 34 in Green Guys Board, a.k.a. Sparky, his real name's Chris. He's in the chat room right now.
Oh, okay.
And he's in the same hosting center as Mojo, I believe.
Gotcha.
And actually, he took us on a tour of the host a few weeks ago. Absolutely incredible.
Yeah.
If there's a nuclear attack, I want to be at the host. Because that's about the safest place I've ever seen. But I've been with Chris for quite a few years now. He's just a really good tech. I don't have to ever worry about my stuff going down and anything I need. He can write a script or figure it out, and it's just wonderful hosting.
That's nice. That's important. Yeah, you know, I don't really talk about it in the adult circles very much just because they have a lot of mainstream clients, but yet another one of the jobs that I do is I'm a sales VP for, you know, primarily a mainstream hosting company, but they do have several clients that are adults. In fact, the owner of the company is the original founder of Bondage.com back in 1994 and ran it until he sold it to Penthouse in 2006. But they have a data center based in San Jose. And yeah, the first thing that people say is like, okay, what happens during an earthquake? You know, because there's fault zones all around there. And yeah, the place is like freaking Fort Knox the way it's fortified and everything.
Yeah, that's it's important. I mean, I've been with over the years. I've been with a lot of hosts, and since being with hosted with Chris, I've never been down. So I
good,
you know, which is one I can say for the other hosts I've been with. But being in a good data center is important.
Yep, totally.
So
Does anybody have any questions? I guess for me or anything.
Let me put a little chat here. God, I wish I had learned to type better in school.
You know, a funny story about that. I hated my typing teacher in high school. I mean, she was the biggest bitch out there. And I mean, I took it seriously, though. And I actually got to the point where, you know, when I was 17, I was able to type 60 words per minute, which in the grand scheme of things isn't great, but I could still do it without looking at what I'm doing. And here I am, what, 25 years later, and I could still, you know, maintain that. So, I mean, I really got a lot out of my typing class in high school.
Now, I think I'm a little older than you. I'm not positive. But there wasn't computers when you were in high school, was there?
There was. I'm trying to think what kind of computer. I mean, I remember using, like, an Apple IIe.
Okay, you're definitely younger than me then.
Yeah, I'll be 43 soon. We were using, like, Apple IIe, like, late junior high, early high school. You know, I was definitely using floppies in college. I mean, I started college in 86. So, but yeah, there wasn't really any kind of computer class, per se, until I was really about a senior.
But you actually saw a use for typing, because there was computers.
Well, and typewriters, you know.
Yeah, I mean, when I went to school, there was nothing but typewriters. Computers were still room-sized things that I don't even know if they had keyboards back then.
Right.
So I just had no use for typing and just never really got proficient in it.
Yeah, I think my generation was the first one that really managed to get on board with all that, you know. I mean, when I first got into the industry, the majority of the people that I dealt with, because I did start at Why Not when it was owned by Sex Tracker at the time, I mean, the majority of the people there were in their 20s. You know, and I was, what, 31, 32 when I started, and was just amazed at how, it's like, wow, okay, I'm one of the older people in this industry.
Yeah, it's my partner's just a little bit younger than me, and her typing skills just amazed me.
Yeah.
But it doesn't really seem to be any questions.
Okay.
And anything else you'd like to add?
You know, I think I pretty much, you know, had diarrhea of the mouth for the last 45 minutes here. I think everybody knows more than they need to know about me, so.
So they shouldn't, like, rent one of your old movies where you acted?
Oh, you want me to talk about that? Okay, well, you know what?
I see them.
I actually found one of the newest clips that I did. When I was an actor back in the 90s, I guess for those who don't know me out there, I was doing occasional TV gigs and really trying to make a name for myself with that. And I worked enough to warrant, you know, the amount of time that I put into it, but not enough to make any kind of a livable salary, which is ironic because I guess from what my earnings were back in the 90s, it put me in the top 10 or 5% of all people in the Screen Actors Guild for earnings. But that's kind of a weird statistic because there's probably about 500,000 people that are in the Screen Actors Guild, you know, and maybe just a few thousand stars who are making, you know, any kind of real money. And that was when I got started. I'd say probably now there's over 1 million people in the Screen Actors Guild. But I mean, I did Melrose Place, Seventh Heaven, In the House.
I see. Was a security guard.
Yeah, that was Seventh Heaven.
Okay.
It was like 14 years ago. I had a regular commercial gig way back when on Arsenio Hall in like 92. I did a few commercials here and there. I did Friday Night Lights a few years ago, and I did a commercial for MTV a couple years ago. I got a lot of credits out there. I mean, if people were to look up my name, look up Jay Capita and go to IMDb, you'll see some stuff. You know, if anybody wants to email me, jay@whynot.com, I'd be more than happy to send them YouTube links and some of my stuff. You know, it's fun.
Hey, it's, you know, I don't know too many people that have been actors in this business.
Yeah, I'm still getting paid for some of this stuff, too. I mean, I get checks, you know, they're really puny. I mean, I'll get a $5 check here, another one there. And I think recently I got like a $20 or a $30 check, actually, for something that I shot 15 years ago.
That's more than the actors of Gilligan's Island got.
Yeah, right. They got totally screwed.
Yes, yes. Anyway, Jay, it's been an absolute pleasure having you on the show.
Well, thank you for having me, Cleo.
And I'll do this again sometime, maybe.
Sounds good.
Okay, bye now.
Bye-bye.
Well, that was Jay from Why Not. And this pretty much concludes our show for tonight. I thank you all for coming, and I look forward to next week. Bye now.